What is this music?
What do you mean?
There is no other music. This is when we were grooving.
What's up, hosers, and welcome to Bookenders, the show where we discuss an album through the lens of its first and last song. I am your co-host, Justin Hensley, and joining me, as usual, is my co-host, Dave Brown. Dave, how's it going?
Oh, I am breathing, so we're surviving.
Yeah.
How are you?
Not too bad. Got some health updates that got to address, but it's a positive. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I can actually progress and get through some things. So that's good.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been a minute since we've done one of these. The last one of these we did. Did we do it in November? I believe.
Yeah, it was late November.
Yeah, it was around Thanksgiving, I think. Maybe on, I don't remember the date exactly, but. What did we talk about? I was trying to remember what.
Javelina.
Oh, yeah, the Javelina record. That's right, the one you hated.
Yeah. You know, I greatly disliked it. I don't know if I would go as far as to call it hate, but yeah, not my cup of tea.
Yeah. Yeah, so we took a little time off with the holidays and everything going on, and then on the main show, we took a little break too. Also, this episode is going up in the main Punk Lotto Pod feed. Because Dylan went out of town like immediately after the holidays, so we didn't record a regular episode last week together. So this will go in the main feed. It'll also be on the Patreon and Dave's Substack, so plenty of places to listen to it. But I don't know why I'm introing where you can listen to it when they're already listening to it. So I don't. That's kind of useless information at this point. But it's available. It is available. So the premise of this show is, like I said at the top, we take an album and we just talk about the first and last songs on the album. We do talk about the album as a whole, as a piece, but we are focused primarily on the first and last song. This is based on an idea that I heard in another podcast where they were talking about how an album should have a really strong final track. And I personally always felt like an album should have a really strong opening track. So I kind of took that idea, mashed it together with my own theory, and that is where the idea of the show came from. Dave initially had a newsletter feature that you would do occasionally, which was, I forget the name of the...
Closing Statement.
Yes, where you would just talk about the final track on an album.
I need to do that again.
Yeah. They're really fun to read, too. So if you haven't read any of those yet, go read them on Dave's Substack. And subscribe there while you're at it. Give us both downloads. Subscribe everywhere you can, and we'll get all the download numbers, and we'll think we have more listeners than we actually do.
Yeah, we can tell that to advertisers.
Yeah.
No one's getting advertising in our dopey shows.
But yeah, it's a fun idea, and I've really enjoyed the episodes we've done so far. I believe we've done three previous to this, and yeah, it's still a little bit of a... We do it once a month, we try to, and it's a little bit of a learning curve on how we're going to make this show its own little unique identity, but I think we're getting there.
Yeah, in 6 months to a year, we'll have it nailed down.
Yeah.
For a while, at least.
Would you like to intro the album for us? Because I believe it was your selection this month.
It was. It was my choice. So we are going to discuss Set Your Goals by Siv. And
yeah.
This album came out in 1995, and it was on Atlantic Records, or on their imprint Lava, and also Revelation Records did the vinyl. And yeah, this is basically Gorilla Biscuits 2.0, and it fucking rules.
Let's talk about where we kind of each got into them. Do you remember when you first got into Siv?
It was in real time. I saw the video for Can't Wait 1 Minute More on 120 Minutes. And instantly, I was like, oh, shit, this is great. And I went out and picked up the album on cassette, I'm pretty sure. And have loved it ever since. I'm like literally day one. Well, day one from when it hit MTV, and I was familiar with Gorilla Biscuits before, so I knew about them. I'd heard at the very least the self-titled Gorilla Biscuits record, and this was just, I'm like, it just picks up right where they left off, and I'm absolutely loved it. How about you?
Yeah, I I'm trying to remember, like, when I would have first heard it. It would have been much later. I was not aware of it when they were an active band first time around. I want to say I just learned of Gorilla Biscuits first and then learned about Civ after. But they weren't, like, one right after the other. It was definitely some time between them before I ever actually listened to the Civ record. I may have even listened to it. I may have even listened to it not realizing it was most of the Gorilla Biscuits, and I probably just thought it was maybe just one of them, but we'll get into more of that. But I think that's how I first got into them, and yeah, I've loved this record since I heard it. You know, it's just a classic 90s punk rock record, and I do feel like there's a decent amount to talk about here.
Oh, I agree. So I guess we'll get into the story of the band. So Gorilla Biscuits started sometime in the mid 80s. Straight edge hardcore punk band, youth crew band from New York City, and eventually they broke up. When they did, the singer Anthony Civarelli, I think is how you pronounce his name, went on and opened a tattoo parlor in Long Island, which, as far as I know, he still runs to this day.
I think so. Yeah.
The drummer went off and just basically started playing in every other fucking band ever, especially from New York. And now he's the drummer in 7 Seconds. And Walter, whose last name I can't pronounce, went on and formed the band Quicksand, a post-hardcore band. And a few years after that, basically Walter was bemoaning the fact that hardcore wasn't hardcore anymore. And it was basically just heavy metal. And he was like, someone needs to just do a hardcore record. And he wrote some songs and essentially got Gorilla Biscuits back together. They went to the studio, recorded a couple of 7 inches, and then got signed to an Atlantic Records imprint. And we're like, oh shit, we need to make a whole record, and made a whole record. Now, my understanding, and this is a little contradictory with your notes, but my understanding is Walter actually does play on the record. He's uncredited though, because he was already on a major label deal for Quicksand. But this is literally a Gorilla Biscuits album. It is one of the late day Gorilla Biscuits lineups. And, you know, in the music video for Can't Wait 1 Minute More, it has the guy who became their full-time guitar player. And, but yeah, it's a Gorilla Biscuits record is what it is.
Yeah. The three main people involved in this record who were in Gorilla Biscuits are Civ, Sammy Siegler, Walter Schreifels, and I believe...
And the bass player, he was also in Gorilla Biscuits.
Arthur Smelios.
He was one of the core GB members.
Yeah, it is interesting because I did see a quote. I feel like I read a quote that said Walt does not play on the record. So I don't know. Maybe one quote comes from back then when they were under contract and another quote comes after the fact. It's like, oh, yeah, I played on there. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting when the video hit MTV and when it got, you know, major play, it was Walter never came up. He wasn't in the music videos. He wasn't talked about. They were asked in an interview on MTV about whether or not they ever played Gorilla Biscuits songs. And they said when they did a tour of Europe, they did play a few because Gorilla Biscuits didn't really get over there very much at all. And the guitar player was like, I wasn't even in that band. So at the time, they absolutely were playing it off like, no, we're not Gorilla Biscuits, and didn't mention anything from what I remember about Walter. Now, in my defense, it is like 30 years ago. But now they just freely talk about, Walter's like, I wrote all the songs. And except the cover that they do. And it was his idea to put the band together. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and this is where I mentioned before we started recording, there's a piece in your notes that it goes contradictory to the way I see this band. And it's your description that they're a melodic hardcore / pop punk band. No, they're a hardcore band. When I hear the word hardcore, this is what I think of. This is, you go from Minor Threat, you know, Bad Brains, Minor Threat, 7 Seconds is a direct line to Gorilla Biscuits and to Civ. So, when I think about hardcore, those are the bands I think of. so much of this other. So whenever I like hear you guys on your show talk about hardcore, I'm like, what the fuck are y'all talking about? I don't know any of this stuff. So yeah, hardcore. What, when you hear the word hardcore, what do you think of? Like, what's the style? What's an example of an artist?
I mean, I guess if you, I know a lot of it has to do with timing, you know, and when you are introduced to these genres. And I feel like you were introduced to them, what, late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah,
when you would have been getting into it. And the version of hardcore that existed, you know, around that point, I do see how you think of this record as a hardcore record, because it does kind of fit in that kind of similar vein. To me, I do fully acknowledge that all the stuff in the 80s is hardcore. Like, I'm not just, you know, ignoring that kind of stuff. It is hardcore music, too. I guess when I think of what hardcore is now in 2025, I imagine, or it's not even 2025, it's 2026, but I imagine anything like post-Earth Crisis. So the more metallic sound, it just kind of became a very dominant sound in hardcore throughout the 90s and the 2000s. You did see a return to form in the 2000s, and there is some like 90s, you know, youth crew inspired and 80s hardcore inspired stuff, but there was like a big push in the 2000s to kind of like really go back to that. But even then, a lot of that hardcore, I still hear more of the post Earth Crisis hardcore in those bands than I actually hear the pre metalcore version of hardcore. So I know it's all timing, totally.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I never could get into Earth Crisis. I never liked them, what little I've heard. Plus, by all accounts, from what it seems like, those guys are raging assholes. So, I mean, I'm sorry, but if you're like the kind of person who's like, I'm going to beat you up for smoking a cigarette, go fuck yourself. You fuck right off with that. It's no, that's not. I think you're missing the point of what Straight Edge was supposed to be, which wasn't even supposed to be anything initially.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, the whole idea with Walter with this record saying, I want to make a hardcore record. And the way they describe this, it's Minor Threat plus Sham 69. And I'm like, yeah, that's in those early hardcore bands, Minor Threat, 7 Seconds especially, were definitely listening to a lot of Oi and pulling from that. So, yes, I think that's it. It's an age thing. I'm old. But yeah, to me, this is absolutely in no way, shape or form a pop punk record. I could see the melodic hardcore tag, but to me, there's melodic hardcore really requires an amount of Bad Religion and Dag Nasty in the sound to be melodic hardcore. And this is where I'm really picking at nits. Because I get really angry when I hear people like refer to a band like Bad Religion as a pop punk band. I'm like, what are you smoking? I mean, I hate when people call the Bouncing Souls a pop punk band. I'm like, no, they are not. They're a punk band.
Yeah, everyone kind of has their own things that they apply genre tags to. Mm-hmm. So there's very few. I feel like there's very few people would have one-to-one exact, like, no, I think this is hardcore. Well, I think this is pop punk. I do think this is very pop punky. Like, it is extremely poppy to be. There's, like, half the record is straightforward hardcore. Yeah. But then a lot of the singles and stuff that were chosen for this record are just pure pop punk songs to me. So, I think that's why I think they're both, really.
I could see that. I guess my argument against that would be, have you listened to the early 7 Seconds records and how poppy those are and how melodic that stuff is? Also, a perfect example is the song Step Down by Sick of It All, which is a very melodic and poppy song. But I don't think anyone would ever, in their right minds, call Sick of It All anything other than a hardcore band.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't.
they would probably beat you up. They're scary.
Yeah. It's those New York hardcore guys.
Yeah. Oh, man. Next thing you know, Madball guy is going to call him.
Uh-oh. Like, he's been summoned.
He has. Madball Mystery Caller, Johnny Three Toes, what are your thoughts? What is hardcore, and where does Civ fall in that definition?
Yeah. But sound off in the comments.
Yes, please do.
And wherever it is you're listening to this on. There is one little other detail that I thought would be kind of neat to mention. We do have former second guitarist of Quicksand, Charlie Garriga, playing guitar on here. He was in Quicksand before they recorded anything, so he's a very early guy. But my guess is Walt brought him in specifically to be his stand-in for when they need to be a band in person. And yeah, that makes it sense. Was also co-produced by legendary New York City hardcore producer Don Fury. So he is a big part of this production as well.
What do you think of the production of the record?
I think it's pretty good. I think it's a pretty like slick production. It's definitely got a budget, you know, that Atlantic money coming in strong on this album. But yeah, I think it has a really good kind of like slick production to it. And that really shines on the more poppier songs, like, you know, our first track on the record and our other big single here, Can't Wait 1 Minute More. Yeah, I think it sounds good. How about you?
I think it sounds great. It's yeah. I did notice, and it might have been my headphones, it's a little tinny. And again, that very well could be my headphones, or I could be losing my hearing. Both are entirely possible. But that's also, I think, just part of the times of what they were recording with. But no, I think it sounds incredible. How do you think this compares to or is in line with the Gorilla Biscuits records?
I think it is inferior to any Gorilla Biscuits record, except for that reunion 7-inch they did. That reunion 7-inch is pretty bad. The Gorilla Biscuits did. But the Start Today and the self-titled, I think, are better records than the Civ records. That being said, it does feel like a continuation. It does feel like the direction that Gorilla Biscuits probably would have wound up going anyway had they continued into the 90s. They probably would have embraced more of that early 7 Seconds kind of Minor Threat inspired hardcore and got a little poppier with the times.
So my hot take is I think Set Your Goals is better than both of the Gorilla Biscuits records. If I was going to like rank all four records, and technically, you know, the self-titled is an EP, but I would put Set Your Goals at number one, Start Today at number two, the self-titled would be number three, and 13 Day Getaway, which I think is a much better record than people really give it credit for, would be number four.
I did actually kind of want to get your thoughts on that record too, because I've always thought that record was viewed as a disappointment. Like, people don't like that record. I think people have actively called it bad, and I don't go to it. It's not one I go to very often, if ever, but I wasn't sure if that was just like a thing in my group of people, but no. Okay. So it seems like in general, it's still kind of considered pretty weak.
Yeah. When it came out, it did nothing. I remember I got it. I loved the song Big Girl, but at the time I didn't really get what they were doing and get what they were going for. There's a lot of like 60s power pop stuff going on in the record. They're in a lot of ways pulling from the same places that Oasis was pulling from. And I have reevaluated it in recent years, and especially and during listening for this, I've listened to all four of the records a lot. It is much better than I remembered it. Interestingly, the sequencing on streaming is different than it was originally. So that's always throws me off.
That was kind of a thing with this record too. I think you had to actually tell me, oh, the actual last song that's on streaming is not the actual last song on the album. I was like, right. Oh yeah, I probably would eventually have found that once I started doing my research, but if I probably would have been listening to that final track that's on streaming a few times before I would have realized that it's not the actual last official song on the record. But
so the official last song, and we should probably start talking about the songs here in just a second, but the official last song is Don't Gotta Prove It, and Blessed was a hidden track. Glue, which is a cover, was on one of their 7-inches, so it was not originally on this record at all.
I think it appears for the first time on like a Japanese import. Like, I think that's like the first place that has Glue on the at the end of the album.
Yes. And for a while on streaming, there was basically the complete discography. I forget if that's the name of it, but it was everything they had recorded on one album. And now it's actually broken up into the two albums, but they do have a B-sides collection that is on streaming. That is those other songs that were included on that original, or not original, but that other record. And those songs are great. I mean, even with the fact that 13 Day Getaway is not as good as anything else this band ever did under both names, it's still really good. And the B-sides are all really good. It is, I mean, it's just, they're a ridiculously good band. Even going back to their original days as Gorilla Biscuits. And, you know, by the time Civ came around, these guys had all played in bands for a long time. And in some cases, in multiple bands. So they have the experience at the yin yang. Yeah, so the album opens with the title track, Set Your Goals. This works as an opening track.
I do. I think it works very well as an opening track. It is probably one of the most standout songs on the record. I think you could give this song to people who don't know anything about the band and they would get some enjoyment out of it. It was a single, I believe.
Actually, the two singles from the album, or at least the two that got videos on MTV, were Can't Wait 1 Minute More and Choices Made.
Right, okay, so yeah, it was not... That's strange that they did not make a video for this one, too. It just seems like it would have been an obvious choice.
Well, what happened is Can't Wait 1 Minute More got a lot of exposure. It was all over 120 minutes in Alternative Nation. It was a Buzzbin video. Unfortunately, though, when this came out, in the video for Can't Wait 1 Minute More, they're all wearing suits, and Civ is bald, and there was two other bands at the same time who put out videos with songs where members were in suits and at least one person was bald. One, the one that had the most commercial success at the time, was Presence the United States of America. That band sucks. and the other was Hagfish from Dallas. And they're the ones who got the short end of the stick, because by the time their video came out, it's like, okay, look, we can't do any more bald dudes in suits, okay? It's just, it's done. And I think the reason why there was only two singles for this album and two videos is because Choices Made went over like a wet fart in church. No one cared. It got played on 120 minutes and nowhere else.
You know, it's funny because then, like, all the ska bands started doing the suits in their thing too, which the Boston's were already doing that, but they were doing like those tweed jackets and like the pattern suits. By the mid 90s, like once we get to the, you know, Impression That I Get era of the Boston's, they're just in black suits, you know, 90s black suits that don't look good on anyone.
Yeah. Hagfish had said that their whole doing suits thing came from two places. One was the Blues Brothers and two, the Mighty Mighty Boston's. That is what they were pulling from. And I mean, the Specials wore suits, so
yeah,
that
yeah.
was a, you know, a ska thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes more sense for ska bands to do it. And that's who I think of who does it the most, because didn't Goldfinger even have, like, a suit in, like, one of their videos, too? I think they were wearing suits.
God, they John, suck.
John Feldman, man.
Dude, I will say that here in your bedroom, it's yeah. like a begrudgingly good song. I feel the way about that song that I do about, like, all the small things. Like, look, even a broken clock is right twice a day. But everything else about Goldfinger just makes me cringe so bad. But that's not what we're talking about today.
We are not talking about Goldfinger today. We are talking about Set Your Goals, our opening track here. Yeah, it starts off with this really fun, bouncy riff. It's got, like, man, we were talking about ska. There is like a swing to that riff. It has like a bounce to it. Now, it might be, I don't know where you would trace that back to.
It And I think this is ties in with the Marching Goals version of the song, mm-hmm. but it feels like marching band music. It's got that bounce.
Yeah, I definitely think of, like, I think a little rockabilly, even a little, with the way that riff kind of bounces around. Maybe, I don't really hear ska in it. That's not really one. But I do hear some swing in there, too. Yeah, it has a bounce. It has a fun bounce. Which is why I was like, this should have been a single, because it's, like, very bouncy and catchy. I guess Can't Wait 1 Minute More sounds very similar. Like, they're different songs, but they're, like, two different songs doing the same kind of song.
Yeah.
And I could see why they would be like, well, if we put out Set Your Goals as a single after Can't Wait 1 Minute More, people are just going to think we sound like one thing, which
right.
And they don't.
Can't Wait 1 Minute More, I think, was the actual first song they recorded.
Right.
I can't remember if the All Twisted 7-inch came out before the Can't Wait 1 Minute More 7-inch, because both came out on 7-inch before Set Your Goals was recorded, before they were even signed or anything.
Yeah, you'd have to like dig into what month they came out in, but yeah.
Exactly, and that information might not be available.
I do think, too, that Set Your Goals has these like big tom drums that I feel like a lot of the swing revival bands borrowed from. I don't even know if they were borrowing it from this particularly, but like just the way that some of the drumming sounds on this, I'm like, oh yeah, I hear the... What was the Youth Brigade swing band?
Royal Crown Review.
Right. I hear a little bit of that. I hear a little bit of the... what was the other? I feel like there was another, like... yeah.
Brian Setzer Orchestra?
Yeah, Brian Setzer Orchestra. Yeah, because I don't think Cherry Pop and Daddies when I hear this song, because... God, that band sucked. Think of
Cherry Pop and Daddies, like, ever.
Terrible name. Terrible band. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, definitely Royal Crown Review, though. That's the one I think of a lot. Especially their appearance in... The Mask, like the song that they played in that movie. Funnily, you know that Chips Ahoy commercial that has like the big band doing like a, I think it's like a Benny Goodman or somebody song, but it's like kind of modern and almost, I don't know if there's guitars in that song or not. They ran that commercial forever, but I think of that too, which is funny, but which is not the only time I think of Chips Ahoy, because they do that punky Chips Ahoy commercial too, like a claymation cookies and punks with mohawks and... Yeah.
One of the benefits of not having cable television for over 20 years is the fact that I don't see commercials at all. I was going to say, I had never thought of like swing with the bounce in these songs, but considering that where my head went was marching band, that makes sense. Because yeah. That is a, you know, that comes from swing and jazz and big band. So yeah, I good call.
As far as like an opening track, I think it's a great hook. You know, it's a super catchy tune with a easy to sing along with kind of song. There's lots of haze, like a gang vocal hey hey in the song. It's super easy to sing along with. If you don't know any other word to song, you can start singing along with the haze in the middle of the line, so you don't have to worry about that. But yeah, I think it's just like a really strong opener. I guess as far as like what it does for the rest of the record, like does it show what the rest of the album is going to be like?
I think it does. I think it maybe doesn't show like exactly what you're going to get for the rest of the record, but it sets thematically things up. It sets a theme that is reiterated throughout the record, because the second song is this blistering, absolute, cannot argue hardcore song.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is just balls to the wall. And that's something I really like about this record, is there's almost an every other. It's not quite that the whole way through, but it's like, here's a poppy hardcore song. And now here's something that's going to bust your balls. And now we're going to get poppy again. And now we're going to kick you in the dick again. So yeah, I think it sets the theme and sets the stage very well.
I guess if we want to talk about the theme, we could talk about the lyrics of the song.
Yeah.
Let's see. You want me to read them or do you want to?
Oh, you're so good at it.
All right. So here are the lyrics to Set Your Goals. I will be skipping the repeating lines because there are quite a few repeating lines in the song too. I don't know why.
Repeating lines in a hardcore song?
Funnily enough, I just copied and pasted from the Genius website, and the way they lay out their website, you know, they have like those ads in the middle of it or like videos in the middle of it. Apparently, I copied and pasted it because it was in the middle of the page. The Goo Goo Dolls Iris lyrics and meaning.
I was like, don't read that part.
That is not the lyrics to the song. I don't think Iris was Iris even out by 95? It wasn't. No, it's like a year or two later, right?
No, it came out in like 98.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's do the lyrics to set your goals. Take what time you need to make that choice. I got to take this over because it's like, it's written in a way that like they stop the line because that's where he stops it in the song, but it's not the end of the thought. So it's one of those kind of songs. Take what time you need to make that choice might be all you ever get. We all got to make our decisions or take a backseat every time. Is that the actual every time?
So,
yeah. This is genius, so people can put in their own lyrics if they're not, you know, sure what they mean. But that's what they have here. I don't know.
I mean, also the thing with these lyrics is there's, because of the bounce of this song, there is a very specific cadence to the way that it goes through. And it's not a cadence that lends itself to just reading.
Yeah, it is. Because when I was thinking of like when I do read it, it does say every time on P lyrics as well. So because when I thought about reading it, I was like, this song has a bounce and you're gonna want to do the bounce. And but I don't actually want to do the bounce. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to sing the song. I just want to read the lyrics.
Here, yeah, I'll give it a shot. You want me to try?
Yeah, you want to try that one? Okay.
Yeah. I should not have done this. I don't read well. Take what time that you need to make. That choice might be all you ever get. We all got to make our decisions or take a backseat every time. When you can't figure out what you wanted and you're sick of playing off everything is fine. You don't know what it is, but you want it. You're on your way there once you set your goals. And then there is a 1, 2, 3, 4, which is Walter. According to two interviews I listened to on, there's that podcast that's about Revelation Records.
What was that show called?
Oh my God. I've got it in my references in my notes and I've already forgotten what the thing is. Anyway, don't get stuck on the money making. You miss too much and it doesn't last. You get more from what you get, what you're given. What you get.
It's more. Not easy.
No, it is not. You get more from what you've given. Make more life than living. The syllables in here.
Because this is definitely one where you would be able to sing it better.
Yes.
It is one where, like, if you did sing it, but I don't want to do that.
No. Okay, next verse. When you can't figure out what you wanted and you're sick of playing off everything is fine, you don't know what it is, but you want it. You're on your way there once you set your goals. Well, you can't pass off all the blame again because time isn't in your hands. You can't live your life just covering up. You might not get a second chance. A whole bunch of hays.
No, you need to do each one.
Hey, 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 hey. No, I'm not doing that.
It's like 16 hays.
Yeah. You got to take aim. Won't you take it? You're the only one to blame, so don't fake it. Spend your time like you're drawing a line between yourself and what you want. You got to set your goals.
Yeah. So what does this song mean?
Get off your butt and do something.
Yeah. It is a carbon copy of the song Start Today, lyrically. Like, sonically, very different songs. But Start Today is the same idea. You got to get up and do it. You just got to get up and do it is like the whole message of Start Today. And Set Your Goals is like, you got to set goals. What's your 5-year plan? Where do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
It's they have themes that they like.
Mm-hmm. Positive. What is it? The PMA, positive mental attitude.
So, okay, let's talk about PMA, because there's some things that I associate with this band and that definitely get associated with them. The PMA, positive hardcore, youth crew, straight edge. What are your thoughts on these items?
They're fun. There's not a ton of positivity in lyrics, especially in like punk and hardcore. it's not necessarily something that, you know, shows up frequently. Sometimes someone will write a song about it, but even like Bad Brains, who did the whole PMA thing, like most of their songs aren't that, you know. I feel like they did way more songs just about Ja and Rastafarianism than they ever did about positive mental attitude. But it also, that comes from that book, right? Isn't it like Think and Grow Rich? I think that's what they were taking that from, that inspiration from. It's like an old self-help book, 80s self-help book. And
I have no idea.
I'm fairly certain that's what it's from. But yeah, there's not enough positivity. I mean, I know a lot of times lyrics are meant to be just, you know, getting out all your emotional, you know, frustrations, or, you know, trying to express something in a way that, you know, you can't in your day to day, or maybe even just you can't talk it out, but you could write it this way. So it is kind of rare to have like positive lyrics in songs. Most of the time, the most positive songs we tend to run across are either, you know, like love songs, like positive, you know, upbeat, fun love songs, or like, weirdly, Christian music. Christian music has a shit ton of positive lyrics. So there's a lot of that there. But there's also a lot of, I'm an awful sinner. You know, these are the terrible things I've done.
There's, you know, there's a lot of positivity in that youth crew, or especially the early stuff and early hardcore. You know, I could see, like, I don't think Minor Threat was ever, you know, professed PMA, but there is definitely something, you know, positive and inspirational about their music. Even to some extent, Dag Nasty as well. 7 Seconds, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Has that. I think Operation Ivy has it.
Yeah, they do.
I think the Boston's have it. I think Bouncing Souls have it. I think early Dropkick Murphys have it. So there's, in fact, in my head, there's a line of, in like, throughout the history of rock and roll, where you've got this certain type of energy and attitude that, if you want to like find a starting point, you could maybe say CCR, and then it went to like the Police, and then it went to U2, and then it went to 7 Seconds. And from there, you know, Gorilla Biscuits and Operation Ivy, the Boston's, so on and so forth. I do think, and someday I'm not going to mention this, but I do think there's also a lot of like positivity and uplifting stuff in a lot of the big music artists.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, you've talked about that a bit. It's, as far as like positive songs being something that you've found yourself gravitating to more in the last few years.
Yeah, it's funny because the world sucks, and especially as I'm issues with my own mental health go, you know, keep developing, I find it harder to sit with stuff that is, for lack of a better term, woe is me, or that is wallowing in this shit sucks. And even though, like, two of my favorite bands of all time, The Replacements and Sincere Engineer, I love them dearly, but I don't listen to them very much anymore because they are some wallowing sons of bitches. They are just in their shit deep and digging. And I get it because I feel that all the time. And it is cathartic to listen to that, but I've gotten to a point in my life where I'm like, okay, look, I'm barely holding on half the time. And I don't need to be reminded of that when I'm listening to music. I need something to try to keep me balanced. And I think that's something that I've, in a lot of ways, always been drawn toward, because bands like U2 and 7 Seconds have always been hugely important to me. And this album, Set Your Goals, is right in line, I think, thematically and spiritually in with that kind of thing. And I would also say that, and maybe it's just because this is all the shit I really like, but I think Frank Turner's stuff is in that same sphere.
I don't know if we've ever discussed this on the show. I know I've talked about it with Dylan on the main show, where I'm not a lyrics person. And what I mean by that is, when I'm listening to a song, the thing that I'm paying attention to is not usually the lyrics. It's usually one of the last things I'm paying attention to in a song. Unless it's like something that just like is super clear and really stands out. You can't help but notice it right away. I don't know if that's like a ADD thing or type thing where you can't focus on what's being said and you're just more focused on the sounds and the noise. Cause that's what when I listen to music, that's what I'm paying attention to, is the sound, the tone, the textures, like all of that element of the music. The lyrics is the thing I'm just like, I have to go read it and then be like, oh, that's what they're saying there. They don't really like lodge with me as I'm active listening. So for you, like, is lyrics something like right there at the top or the forefront that you think of when you're wanting to listen to something?
Absolutely. Yes, I am very much a lyrics person, which is there is something that can be frustrating when I can't figure out what the fuck someone is saying. And there are some records that and songs that I love dearly and I've loved for decades. And if you put a gun to my head and played me the song, there's a very good chance I'm not going to be able to tell you what half the words are because it's either in something in the recording or just for whatever reason, my ear doesn't pick it up. Because there are definitely songs I've read the lyrics to and have literally the songs have been in my life for over 20 years. And I'm like, oh, that's what they're saying. Huh. So, but yeah, it is as much as the sound is important and it very much is. It's I'm like a not big picture. It's like a whole package, a holistic way. And so lyrics and sub and in some ways, vocals are very important. Case in point, our good friend Jason talked about in the Discord recently, an album that came out just recently that he's like, OK, this is album of the year. And I went and listened to it. And I think I got two or three songs in. I'm like, OK, this music is really good. I cannot take this dude's vocals. And I asked him, I was like, do the vocals sound like this through the whole album? And he's like, yes. I'm like, that's going to be a deal breaker for me. I just can't. There was just something about it, which is ironic because I like Dinosaur Jr. and he can't sing worth a shit. But then again, I don't listen to Dinosaur Jr. very often. I have to be in the right mood.
And I will say, I am like you, though. Like, I am... Funnily, I don't pay attention to lyrics, but I do pay attention to a voice and how the voice sounds. And that is usually the deal breaker for me. Like, if I do not like these vocals or how, I mean, if I don't like how these vocals sound, I'm probably not going to like the record. Because I can like almost all of the music that's being made. You know what I mean? Like, the instruments and all that stuff. Very little of that is the stuff that actually is turning me off. It's more often than not, it's the vocals, so... Yeah, we're alike in that way, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, but I really do. I've found the older that I get, the music that I listen to the most and that I connect with the most are things that hit me lyrically. And I will focus on that a lot. And it, like, if you go and look at my Scrobbles, it's like, dude, do you listen to anything other than these like 10 artists? Because I listen to so much of the same stuff. But that is because that's the stuff that really connects with me on, not to sound cheesy or dumb, but on a deeper level. and I would say this album definitely connects with me in that way. There's stuff here that I love. Like Choices Made, for example, I absolutely, every time I hear that, I'm like, fuck yes. Everything about the song, yes. I don't know. I just lost my train of thought.
You want to move on to our closing track?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So the actual closing track of this album is the song Don't Got to Prove It. This too. And this song is interesting. It is very stripped down. It's like one guitar, kind of distorted. It's one layer. It's not like layered guitars like a lot of the other songs are. I don't even think there's... Is there even bass in this song?
I think there is. There's no drums.
It's like a tambourine or something, yeah. Right? Yeah. It's
like you want to say this is an acoustic song, except he's obviously playing an electric guitar.
Yeah. That was my thinking. Like, it feels like an acoustic song when you're listening to it, but if you actually pay attention, it's like, oh, no, that's an electric guitar. It's just, like I said, it's not three layers of electric guitars, and it's probably even, like, not even that distorted. Probably whatever pedal or whatever effect that they used on it, they probably, like, turned down some of the distortion on it. So it is an electric song, but it's not, like, full kit, full drum kit band, you know, high energy. Even I couldn't even tell how much bass was on it because, you know, it's even that seems like it's kind of, like, toned down, too.
Yeah, it's like it gives you the sense of they're sitting in a circle in chairs and playing the song with, like, their little amps. And the drummer doesn't have drums because, you know, it's like around a campfire or something.
A lot of gang vocals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like mostly gang vocals.
So do we want to do the lyrics first? Or do we want to talk about our thoughts first?
Yeah, we can do some lyrics over here. Okay. I'll read this one since this one, I don't think is going to be as hard to read.
All right.
There's a lot more repeating in this one though.
Yeah.
So here we are. The lyrics for Don't Gotta Prove It. When they all come down on the way we live, talking down from the pulpit where they sit, don't give me a single inch, cause they gonna take a mile. It's common sense, and you don't gotta prove it to anyone. You don't gotta prove it at all. You don't gotta prove it to anyone. They're all wrong. They're all wrong. To all the kingmakers and their set, we might seem down, but we're not finished yet. Living a life of struggle and not regret. You stay true to yourself, and you can bet you don't gotta prove it to anyone. You don't gotta prove it at all. You don't got to prove it to anyone. They're all wrong. Fuck them. They're all wrong. We have an instrumental piece in the song here. And then it just repeats pretty much the rest of the song. You don't got to prove it anymore. You don't got to prove it at all. You don't got to prove it to anyone. They're all wrong. They're all. And then it repeats like that for the rest of the song. No change in the lyrics there.
Yeah, no.
So what does this song mean to you?
It is, you know, in a lot of ways, thematically, it fits right in with the opening track, Can't Wait 1 Minute More, Start Today, in that you live your life. You don't have to prove yourself to anyone. I'm literally now quoting the lyrics. you don't have to follow what other people say you need to do. You be you, basically. It's almost, I kind of hate that you asked me what the song means to me, because I'm like, it's like trying to give definitions to certain words. If, like, someone says, hey, how do you define the word the?
Mm-hmm.
Just gonna be like, yeah. What? No, it's just, it's the. What are you talking about? I mean, to me, I hear the song and I'm like, what do you mean? What does it mean? Did you not listen to it? It just, it means the thing. It's the thing right there. But yeah, I love this. Sometimes I wonder if this is, and I wonder this a lot with the Bouncing Souls, like how much of this is so much of its time and of the generation of people that wrote it. And it's like, okay, there's so much Gen X sentimentality in Gorilla Biscuits and in Civ that there's a part of me that's like, okay, is a 13-year-old in 2026 going to put this on and get it? Not because they couldn't, or not because it's, you know, oh, we were so much smarter or any of that crap. It just came from such a different world. And it just feels so, I don't know, so mine, for lack of a better term. am I making any sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. It does make sense. You're right, because this is not the kind of song you hear very much today, lyrically. I mean, maybe some. There's some of the sentiment you could probably hear in some modern lyrics, but, you know, the idea of just, like, don't let people judge you. Don't let people, you know, look down on you. You don't owe them anything. Like, that premise is, there's probably hundreds of songs written every single year that have that similar sort of premise, but there is a anti-authority kind of take angle from this too. I feel like it's like, don't worry about them. You know, these people who want to, like, you know, from their pulpit, and the kingmakers specifically is what it references in the song. It's like, yeah, it's interesting.
You know, one thing I think that is probably easy to miss construe about these songs is that there is very much this anti-authority bent to them, but there is also, throughout this entire record, such a sense of community. And whether it's just implied, or maybe it's just something that I'm reading into it, but to me, there's a massive sense of responsibility to those around you. It's the whole idea of the old hardcore idea of unity, and that it's not meaning that everyone needs to think the same or believe the same or do this. It's just, we all take care of each other. And that I hear in this song and just in throughout the whole record. And maybe that's just me hearing things, or it comes from the context of the times. I don't know. There's a part of me, I could see someone hearing this song in a vacuum and taking all the wrong lessons from it. Probably reading too much into this. Do you think it works as a closing track?
I think it does work as a closing track, especially when you think of it in the context of the rest of the album. I don't know where else I would put this. And that's kind of my philosophy when we get to these questions. Is this a good opener? Is this a good ender? My approach to when I think of that question is, I can't remove anything from the record. I can only reshuffle. Like, that's my personal, we can't take the songs off. We can't add anything. Just what the record is this a good opener? Is this a good ending? And in the context of the rest of the record, I don't know that you could put it anywhere else but the end of the album. Maybe as like a break between some heavier songs, but I don't know if it would make sense. And I feel like that might mess with the flow of the record if you moved it around. Yeah. I do think there are some songs on the record that would make good closers, which we could do that too when we do like the final kind of verdict section. But with what we have to work with, and if we have to keep this song in here, yeah, it's the closer. That being said, it is my least favorite song on the entire record.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So this goes back to that, the textures and the sounds of it. And I just after you gave me all this really fun hardcore and pop punk stuff, I don't really want the stripped down gang vocal campfire song, you know?
Oh, see, I think this so beautifully sums up the record. And it is in one case, because it is sonically so different, though there is a live recording on that little B-sides EP that is super fun because they do it as a full band.
Hmm.
But it is, in a lot of ways you think, okay, if we stripped down all of these songs and played them as campfire songs, they would sound like Don't Gotta Prove It. And
that's true.
It's nothing wildly different from the rest of the album, just in the way that it's played a little bit. And I think it beautifully ties everything together. I don't even think I could think of a least favorite song on this album. I mean, the one that starts with the thing about Luke from Warzone.
Yeah.
That clip, which is apparently that clip and that whole song are a rib on somebody. I can't remember where I read or heard that in an interview, but it is absolutely them taking the piss out of someone in the New York hardcore scene. It might have even been the Warzone guys, but
it's possible.
Yeah. I think it works. I think the sequencing of this record, I think, is honestly pretty damn perfect. The one place it would work if you move things around would be as either the last song on side one or maybe the first song on side two. And if I remember correctly, my cassette, the first song on side two was Marching Goals. It was either Marching Goals or Solid. I can't remember. I want to say it was Marching Goals. So I don't know, but I've been with this thing for so long. Just the idea of moving anything around is anathema to me.
Yeah, I guess we can talk about that now, I guess. Looking at the record, there's a part of me, if we were to move anything around, there's a part of me that would like the Marching Goals to be the first track, because it would lead, it has the horns, it would be very reminiscent of Start Today, the way the record starts with the horn, I forget what they call that.
That's a sample from something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forget what they call that. Yeah, yeah.
I had never thought of that until I saw that in your notes. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that would be kind of a fun little wink and nod.
Also, though, I do kind of like the idea that it is a callback in the middle of the album, too, though, which it's the only song on the record that does that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat, too. So I don't know. I can't decide if that would be more fun at the top or as a callback. I'm not entirely sure.
What I really need is some marching band to do the full song.
Oh, yeah. That would be great.
Actually, it'd be awesome if some marching band somewhere did this entire record. Yeah. That would be so much fun.
I do think So Far, So Good, So What could work as an opener, too. That's a pretty fun, upbeat song. State of Grace could open. It has, like, the sample on that one, too.
Oh, yeah. Does music make you happy? Here's a little song to fall asleep by.
Yeah, that feels like a Dillinger 4 opener. You know, they use all those kind of, like, samples all the time on their records.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the song itself, I feel like just the sample was doing the lead-in work there. And I do kind of think Can't Wait 1 Minute More and Set Your Goals are kind of interchangeable. I feel like you could flip which song is which, and it would work sonically. I guess thematically, that would probably be the difference. You know, Set Your Goals is like, it is kind of setting the theme of the record, the mantra of the album.
Yeah. You know, speaking of mantra, there's a part of me that will always associate Siv and this album with Shelter and their album Mantra. They came out the same year. They both had their videos on 120 minutes around the same time. And in the case of Shelter, it was Here We Go Again, which is a fantastic song. And there was just some kismet about having these two offshoot bands from these two classic New York hardcore bands, both doing new stuff at the same time, you know, not quite a decade later, and getting at least some flowers for it. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it is kind of neat that the two biggest youth crew bands from New York in the late 80s both had their biggest spin-off, you know, post-project albums in the same year. Shelter started a few years earlier, and had already released some records by then. But yeah it is kind of funny that it's like, one is the Krishna version, of course, but
yeah. And on that Shelter album, Orcel was on there. So it was, you had half of Youth of Today in the band.
Yeah. And that matches so much with Walter producing it and secretly playing on it. And you know, the Arthur and, I'm forgetting the other guy's name. Starts with an S.
Sammy. Yeah.
Sammy.
And I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, Sammy was in Shelter at some point. I mean,
it's possible. He played with everybody. Like, he just is in all the bands.
He's such a good drummer. He is so, so good.
If you're a good drummer, you can play with anybody you want.
One of the things I wanted to touch on a little bit, and it's tangential to this record, is Mr. Arthur got himself in a wee bit of trouble a few years ago when he was at a Gorilla Biscuit show talking on stage and unfortunately used a phrase that has a very bad connotation and absolutely A, didn't know that it had a bad connotation, and B, certainly didn't mean it in that way, where he said the now shunned upon words, all lives matter. Which, even honestly thinking the fact that you would hear those words, and I know why it's shunned upon because of the connotation of the people who have used that in very negative ways. But still, I mean, just those words on their own, it's like, how can you get pissy about this? But yeah, he was just saying something off the cuff and the internet exploded because, of course, someone recorded it. And uploaded it, and people were gonna lose their shit taking something out of context, and it was so funny watching that, because as someone who has, you know, a lot of experience with the band and knows the context and all of the anti-racist stuff they've done over the years, sitting here watching these people who don't know shit from Shinola going off on this, and it's like, y'all, are you seriously? Are we're really doing this right now? to this guy who I have never heard a bad thing about ever. I'm like, really? What are we doing?
It is funny. I do remember when that story broke where it was just like, oh, no. Yeah. Was it Civ or was it Arthur who said
no, it? No, well, Arthur Civarelli.
It's Anthony Civarelli.
It was, right, sorry. No, it was Civ. Yeah, it was Anthony.
Okay. Yeah, so I remember when it came out and I was like, Civ is an All Lives Matter guy? And then I went and like heard the actual recording and I was like, oh, I see what happened here. He did not know that that has a very specific connotation. And especially in that moment, you know, it was just like, yeah, because he's not online. He's yeah.
Why would he?
Civ's not online. That's really what I took that as. He maybe logs in every once in a while to get on something to promote something, but I don't think Civ is doom scrolling, you know?
No. He's a middle-aged tattoo artist in New York, for fuck's sake.
It is funny because, like, that happened, and then, like, Chokehold had their whole thing, and they took the entire wrong way to go about it, because with Civ, it was like, or it was a Gorilla Biscuits show, but it was, right? Yeah, it was a mm-hmm. Gorilla Biscuits set. And, because later he was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that had a different meaning than what it was. Like, that was the, they were apologized immediately and moved on, and everybody was like, you're good. I think there was just too many people who just did not know them and knew their message and thought, because that was my takeaway too. I was like, no, it's Gorilla Biscuits. They're not racists. You know, like that was like my main takeaway. And he fortunately course corrected and everybody else was just like, ah, I see what happened here. Okay, we're moving along. It does kind of remind me of like when like Jeff Rosenstock was going off about, you know, venues taking a cut of the merch, which valid complaint, obviously. But then Propagandi just commented on it on Twitter without knowing the full context of something. And then everyone was like coming for Propagandi and being like, old man, that you don't get it. You're just out of touch. And I was like, you don't know who you're talking to right now. Like, I was just like, go read some Propagandi lyrics. I think you will be quite surprised and realize that he's talking about something different than what is going on here. He doesn't know who Jeff Rosenstock is. He might, but he's not coming for him. But yeah. It is funny how things taken out of context can mess things up for some people.
Yeah, it's sound bites, man. It's the worst. It's always been bad. It is just the bane of modern existence in so many ways because shit gets taken out of context so easily. But in some ways, it is a fascinating microcosm to look at different eras of liberalism and how they see the world and see things and react to things. And I'm the last person to get on the youths for the way that they act and how they, you know, unless you're being an asshole, if you're being an asshole, fuck off. But, you know, I absolutely hate when people are like, these kids today and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry that they are reacting the best way they can to the world you made. You know, who raised them? Who built the products that they're using? Oh, they didn't.
Yeah.
Why are you getting so pissy? But it is still, it's just interesting. I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah.
What do you think of the hidden tracks?
I think they're pretty good. The last track, the actual, if you look at it on, I think it's on Spotify or some of the streaming services, it lists, some places it's called Blessed. Some places it's called They Said We Were the Best. Some places it's called The Best. And then sometimes it's called Blessed. Originally, this is like a Moondog song, which was a Walter band. I think he did it before Quicksand. I think that's when Moondog was around. But maybe there's some overlap there. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, it was another like kind of post-Gorilla Biscuits project that he was doing. And so they just re-recorded it for this record. And I think when they play it live, they call it Blessed, too.
I've always heard it referred to as Blessed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm not as familiar with the other one, Glue. I know it's a cover of somebody.
It's SSD Control.
Ah, yeah.
Our dear buddies. R.I.P. Albaril.
Yeah, yeah. Weird band.
Not into them. Not into them.
There's that one song that the Boston's covered, Police Beat, which I like. At least I like the Boston's cover. But I did have that one CD that was available through Tang Records. I had that at one point. Weird listen. Man. It was just utterly fascinating the turns that hardcore bands took in the like mid to late 80s. It was, everyone was like, oh, okay, we're gonna exit on, you know, Fifth Street, and then someone else went off on Main, and it was just so just weird.
Any other thoughts on the record?
No, I love it. If I'm gonna give it a rating, it's a 4.5. It's damn near perfect.
Yeah, the only other thing I would mention is that the song Can't Wait 1 Minute More actually has its own level of fame going on. They did make a music video for it that was featured on the television series Beavis and Butthead.
For those of you who've never seen the video, it is a taking the piss out of daytime talk shows. Think Ricky Lake, Maury Povich. Most of you listening probably don't know who I'm talking about.
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Yes. Yeah, it was so. Maurice, was that his name?
Maury,
yeah.
Yeah. Maury Povich, right?
That show just became like paternity tests at some point. But yeah, it's such a stupid and fun video, though.
The song is also featured in a 2005 Nissan commercial. It was like the Nissan sales event or something along those lines. I remember sitting with my friend and we were watching TV, probably Lost. That was the show we watched together. And I remember the commercial came on and I was sitting with Grant, who runs Bitter Melody Records. And he was like, "Hey, that's Siv. What is it?" Because we... You know, he like heard it and right away was like, "That's Siv. That is wild. What is it doing in this commercial?" And that was a few years later. So I think they used that Can't Wait 1 Minute More song in those Nissan commercials for a while. But I could not find one. I kept trying to search. And my guess is I could probably find those commercials if I knew maybe the name of the commercials.
Yeah.
And not trying to search for Siv, Can't Wait 1 Minute More. Like, I find people talking about it. I find, like, message boards and posts on, like, Facebook comments and YouTube comments. But I can't find, like, an actual video of the commercial.
Wonder if it's on Dailymotion.
Maybe. The thing is, you could probably just find it by searching, like, Nissan sales event. And you would probably find it easier than actually, like, trying to use Siv in the search terms.
Yeah.
But no, I wanted to.
That whole thing reminds me of Buffalo Tom. Had one of their songs in a commercial, maybe a car commercial too. But there's definitely a part of me that, you know, 30 years ago would have been irate about something like that. And now I'm like, oh no, they probably made more money off of that one commercial than they ever did from anything else. So get paid, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah. In this environment where like artists are struggling to make any kind of money, yeah, take what money you can get. Maybe don't sell out your morals, but you know. Selling some cars, I don't think, is really breaking your own personal rules, unless you're just like, I don't drive cars. I don't know who that person is.
Yeah, not in metro areas like I live in, that's for sure.
Or rural areas like I live in.
Oof, yeah, no.
You have to have a car or someone who could take you somewhere.
Any final thoughts?
Just checking out my notes here. The album did make the Billboard Heat Seekers chart. Can't Wait 1 Minute More charted on the modern rock charts. All Twisted was featured on the TV show What's New Scooby-Doo. Et Tu Brute is featured on the Escape from LA soundtrack. And So Far So Good So What is featured on the Mega Man animated series soundtrack.
You know, they were on the original Warp Tour, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
There was they were on the side stage with, like, Swingin' Utters. And
okay.
Because there's in Swingin' Utters, Juvenile Product for the Working Class, in the thank yous, it mentions Siv and even just refers to the bands on that first Warp Tour. That would have been cool to see.
Yeah, I think that first Warp Tour would have been really fun because it changes once you get into like the late 90s, early 2000s into a little bit more trendy stuff. You know, the more like pop punk mall emo kind of era, and it's just like, man, that first couple were kind of cool, you know.
I mean, the same with Lollapalooza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was, especially that first tour, you're like, what, hold up, Jane's Addiction, Susie and the Banshees, Living Color, Rollins Band, and Nine Inch Nails, What?
Yeah.
What is what?
It's such a stacked lineup.
It is. I think maybe even the Butthole Surfers were on it. That's not a good thing. but yeah, it was just wild. Good times.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess my last thought is I love this record. It's a really fun album. I have a ton of fun when I listen to it.
Agreed. Agreed. So did we win?
Yeah, I think we did.
I concur.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap our episode up. So thank you all so much for listening. This is the first time you've listened to a Bookenders. You can find the rest of the episodes on the Punk Lotto Pod Patreon, as well as the Oklahoma Lefty Substack. I'll have links to those in the show notes so everybody can grab those. And yeah, love to hear your feedback. And I don't know, anything else?
No, just be safe out there. It's shit's gotten real weird and crazy. So be kind to yourselves. And as a great Jerry Springer used to say, take care of yourselves and each other.
All right, that'll do it for us. So thank you all so much, and we will talk to you next time.
Some skank hoes. Ow. It's a video. Well, see you later, Beavis.
Oh, wait, just a minute. Wait, just check it out. Maybe like, give it a chance.
At least it doesn't look like a video.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't your mom watch Montel Williams all the time?
She watches Montel Williams, Jerry Springer, Jane Whitney. She watches all of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I should be on one of these shows, Beavis.
Yeah, but like, what would be the topic? It'd be like, I'm a slut and my son's a dumbass. Next, Montel Williams.
Yeah, that's a good one, buddy. That way we can both be on.
You dumbass.